Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about the crucial political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the challenges facing everyone. Good morning, folks. Steve Williamson here. We're going to be focusing on the challenges of the new tax bill today. And we're doing it as citizens, right, Mike, and individuals rather than as tax accountants or experts.
Well, that's right. Because before the show, I told you the story about a guy come up to me yesterday. He asked me what the show was going to be about today. And I said, we're going to do the Tax and Job Act, they're calling it. And he said, well, you're not accountants. And I thought about that for a minute and stammered and, you know, and apologized. But you know, we shouldn't have to be accountants. This should be just two regular old American guys, relatively intelligent, that are going to discuss the tax code. And Klaus is going to say
something. Yeah, if you don't think Klaus is relatively intelligent, is that, you left him out?
There's three of us here.
But Klaus actually knows,
we
something about economics.
We made him Silent Gary's replacement, so he's allowed to speak, though. Go ahead, Klaus. What's up? Besides, am I wrong here? Should I have a degree in accounting just so I can do my taxes?
No, I think all you have to do is read the editorials from economists, and a lot of my comments and thoughts originated with Paul Krugman, who, as you know, won the Nobel Prize for economics. He teaches at Princeton, and he writes a column in the New York Times. And if you don't read this column regularly, you're really missing something. He explains it in a way that's, I think, relatively easy to understand.
He does, but he also has what he calls wonkish columns, which are filled with all kinds of charts and graphs and are for more economically oriented people.
Those are really fun, but not for everybody.
Yeah.
So the idea is on December 22nd, the Senate voted 51-48 to pass this. The House voted 224-201 with 12 Republicans voting against this tax bill. Most of them from California, states that are going to be hurt. High income and high tax states, high state tax states that eventually this tax bill is going to punish those.
I was reading one economist, and he said, ask yourself why the repeal of Obamacare didn't pass and this tax bill passed. And what he said was, the repeal of Obamacare, millions of people would be hurt almost instantly. I mean, people would feel the impact directly. The damage would be concentrated and visible to a lot of people. The tax bill, he said, the reason the tax bill passed is because the positive aspect of these temporary tax cuts will be felt by an awful lot of people, and the negative consequences are more diffuse and will take time to build up. So, for example, if it increases the amount you have to pay to borrow to for a house, mm-hmm. if it increases the rate, that won't be manifest until about a year. So a lot of the negatives won't be manifested for about a year. The attack on the Obamacare that's hidden in the bill will take about 13 million people off of having medical insurance, but that's over a 10-year period.
Yeah.
So what they've done is they've concentrated some visible stuff, disguised the huge tax cut to corporations and the wealthy,
right,
and at the same time diffused the pain so that people won't pick up on it very quickly.
But according to the sources, and you're absolutely correct, and the thing I want to get at the top of the show here is that it's going to change the way of life of millions of Americans. It's going to change their way. It's going to change the decision, like you just sort of alluded to, buying a house. It's going to affect their decisions moving around because moving deductions are gone. And I want to read from a thing called Investopedia. The overhaul is forecast to raise the federal deficit. And you heard a lot about this. You hear 1.4, 1.6, 1.8, and as much as $2 trillion. And this source says as much as $2 trillion over the coming decade. Estimates vary depending on the assumption about how much economic growth the law will support. But there isn't any economist, which Claus is going to verify, that even hints that there's going to be enough growth to impact this deficit.
Legally, the Senate had to pass a bill that over a 10-year period would only increase the deficit by $1.5 trillion. I mean, that's the bottom line. So they have to at least come up with a case that it's only going to increase it by that much. If it's over it, then a whole set of rules gets in, which would have meant that they would have had to actually have a much more extensive debate. They would have had to have a much larger majority to pass the bill. But once you claim it's only costing us $1.5 trillion in basically in lost revenue, then you can go ahead and pass it with 51 senators.
Well, that's it. The absurdity of the Trump supporters say, well, lower taxes are always good. You know, I have a financial life, and there's two things you do. You either cut expenses or you raise income. You can't cut income and expect to have things work out very well. You're not going to do very well.
The Koch brothers are already have a $25 million campaign to convince people. So what you have is another Republican tax cut that benefits the wealthy. It doesn't just benefit the wealthy. It benefits the wealthy who get their income from investments. That's who benefits the most. It benefits people like Trump, who say they estimated, who knows, the man's finances. Probably wisely he keeps secret, because if they were exposed, we'd have another problem.
Yeah.
But it'll save him about $11 million this next year. So you have to disguise that. I mean, you can't be obvious about what you're doing, Mike, because otherwise, otherwise people go, wait, you know, he saves $11 million, I get $1,000 off.
Well, yeah, but you should. I mean, the hints are there. The fact that the law cuts corporate tax rates permanently and individual tax rates temporarily should already start. That seems odd for a tax reform act.
And if, you know, the thing is, if it does generate higher borrowing rates, then you could lose as much money on the amount of money you have to pay for your house as you do you gain from the tax cut. It's an extraordinarily complicated bill, but they're always structured these ways. It's always for the wealthy and for the poor. I study financial planning, and the only thing I can draw from it, because I studied it back in the 80s, was the boondoggles available for the wealthy that they train you when you study financial planning are extraordinary. Were extraordinary then, and they're extraordinary now. Klaus, you got come in on this?
Well, the interesting part is there's a the Republicans claim two things that can't both be true. They say that
why not, Klaus?
They say that by 1927, the taxes on the middle class will be raised to an extent that it eventually eliminates the deficit.
2027.
And at other times they say that don't worry about those big tax increases that are coming, because they'll be made permanent. It can't be both. Either you're going to have a big deficit, or you're going to have substantial tax increases for the middle class.
So what happens, folks, is that in 2025, any taxes that you've had cut, your taxes will start going up. And unless they change the law, and what's Klaus saying, I think, is a good point. If they change the law, then how are they going to cover this deficit?
Well, the only way that they can cover the deficit, and that's something that that Paul Ryan has been dying to do since his political career started, is to cut Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. And that may come up fairly soon, perhaps even next year. And the question is, will the public swallow it? Will they realize that they've just been cheated in a major way.
We just had 10 years, Klaus, of the Republicans stymieing everything that President Obama and the Democrats tried to do on the basis that it would increase the deficit. And now they passed a bill that's increasing the deficit far more.
Exactly.
And they fought the Obama's administration's attempt to use stimulus to get us out of the worst recession, depression. Mike and I can argue about whether it's a depression or a recession since the 1930s. Now, it's not just, you know, the United States economy is now very strong. The world economy has recovered from 2008, and almost all countries' economies are looking up. So we're going into that kind of environment. So if things are looking up, it's basically, it's still a continuation of the policies that Obama and the Fed, you know, established years ago. The economy has been going up every single year, increasing every year. And now the international economy seems to have picked up too. So all of this is going to, you know, you're going to feel an uptick and a decline in the unemployment rate.
Right. Well, the unemployment rate is already at 4.5%, which was considered, quote, maximum unemployment. And now I think people are wondering whether maybe 3.5 is the right number. The interesting part, of course, is that even with the unemployment rate as low as it's been in a long time, wages haven't gone up. And one can variously wonder why that is. I mean, one reason, and we could devote another program to this, is automation, right? That more and more jobs are being replaced by automation. But at 4.5% unemployment, you would conclude that there's pressure on wages.
So far, there hasn't been. What Klaus is, the point he's making, I just want to kind of underline it, is the theory is this. When you have high unemployment, people will get paid less. When you have very low unemployment, you have a need for a lot of workers. Companies begin to have to raise wages. Now, what you're having is a whole series of corporations saying they're raising wages because of this tax cut, which really has not impacted anybody yet. But it's the prospect of it. So you have someone like Walmart increasing their wage to $11 an hour, which comes out to $22,000, I think, a year. The poverty line is $24,000. So with their wage increases, you know, you're still living below the poverty line. So there's a lot of these things, and you're gonna be hearing vast amount of propaganda, because the number of I was looking at some statistics, the number of lobbyists in Washington representing corporate interests has doubled since 1996. It's just vastly increased lobbying effort. Plus, you have the Koch brothers putting in $25 million to convince you that this is going to benefit everybody, and it's not just for the wealthy.
This sort of begs the question that you can fool some of the people some of the time, but perhaps not all of the people all of the time.
Well, I want to talk about this one other wonkish thing, but I do want to talk about standard deductions and personal deductions and child care and all those things that rank and file folks care about, they may have heard about before, but we're going to try to fill them in on the show here. But one more thing for my gentleman that said it wasn't an account. This is, the law changes the measure of inflation, how the IRS measures inflation for tax indexing purposes. They used to use a consumer price index. Now they're using something called the chain-weighted consumer price index U. The latter takes account of changes consumers make to their spending habits in response to price shifts, so it is considered to be more rigorous than the standard CPI. It also tends to rise more slowly than standard CPI, so substituting it will likely accelerate what they call bracket creep. In other words, after a few years, your whatever bracket you're in, if you're in a 32% tax bracket or a 24% tax bracket, which is what 28 and 35 became, you're not going to be in that, you're going to be paying more. That bracket's going to creep.
You'll get less increase in your Social
That's
Security,
right.
folks.
The value of the standard deduction and other inflation-linked elements in the tax code will also erode over time. Right now, your standard deduction at $24,000 with this really slow-going, growing inflation index, that number is going to not mean as much.
So what they're doing...
And this is not going to expire. This is permanent.
So what they're doing, Mike, is they're changing the way they count stuff.
That's right.
So that it doesn't show as much inflation. And then they can claim that there is less inflation than there actually is, right?
That's probably the rest of their story. I do want to recommend there is a you know, this is a political show, so we kind of do things from a political angle. Krugman, Klaus's wonderful source, does things both practically and politically. But CNN and Money Magazine have done 34 things you got to know about the tax code, and it covers the at least the basic things that anybody can understand that you want to know about. That you might want to know about what's coming anyway. But the other thing that we got to want to say again at 8:30, 15 minutes into the show, is that this doesn't affect us yet. This, you're going to do your taxes for 2017 just like you always did.
The massive tax cut is to corporations, and the massive tax cut is permanent. And what it does, it takes a 35% rate, top rate, and drops it to 21%.
Right.
That's a huge drop. Now, I think a lot of Democrats and progressives thought that the corporate tax rate in the U.S. was sort of what it is there's a big difference, Mike, between the theoretical rate and the actual practice rate that you pay taxes if you're a corporation.
Right.
So we can have these statistics, 35%, but the average corporation is paying 24%, very little. Now this is going to benefit them. The other thing is that, you know, corporations do invest in places where they don't have to pay taxes. Ireland's a good example.
Right.
Now, Ireland's a wonderful country, and but it is not an economic powerhouse, because if I'm Apple and I stash a bunch of money in Ireland, where does the profit go that I have there? Well, they're repatriating some of the money to the U.S. It is not what it looks like. It's just a change in the way they account it. But okay, so suppose this brings in foreign investment to the United States. Somebody from, Saudi Arabia invests more money in the United States than they did in the past. The profit goes to the people who invest the money, not to necessarily everybody else. In other words, a lot of the increase is going to go to people who invest the money, and a lot of them are going to be, of course, foreigners. Nothing wrong with that, but it means that the increases being projected are not really realistic. So if this wasn't true, you'd have a country like Ireland would be a super economic powerhouse, because all these corporations are accountingly. And understand, there's no pile of money when Apple's moving all these billions of bucks. There's no pile of money actually sitting in Ireland. It's just an accounting feature. They're claiming the tax code is such that they can claim that they're making a profit in a country that they aren't, that has a lower corporate tax rate. What this is doing is going to set off a competition to lower taxes, from corporate taxes from different countries. Yeah, that would be the most likely aspect.
The U.S., one of the things you referred to a little earlier was that the effective tax rate versus the tax rate defined as, you know, the effective tax rate in the U.S. as taxes paid on investments earnings was 18.6% in 2012,
right,
with a 35%, as you 38%, whatever it was, whatever the corporate tax rate was before it became 21%, or it becomes 21%. But you said 35%. So the effective rate was 18%. But you look at all these charts that the Republicans publish all the time. There's USA tax rate at 35 or 38%. And then here's Italy and all the other countries that, you know, in the EU that we're competing with.
I just don't know what you do, because the amount of propaganda that's going to be coming out, Mike, and the amount of these phony charts and stuff, You're forced to either find some economist and that you trust and read them, or you have to wade through these charts. You have to know the difference between the rate and the effective rate. Otherwise, it is just, you're just being set up to be convinced of whatever they want to do. This bill benefits mostly the wealthy, $11 million, say, for the Trump Organization. It benefits pass-through corporations. I don't think we'll talk about it unless Klaus wants to. This is a complicated thing that'll save millions and billions of bucks for small groups, taxing them or giving them a benefit of 20%. When I think about it, what seems obvious is not only cutting taxes on the very wealthy much more than on ordinary people, much more. It's cutting taxes on what economists sometimes call rent. It's cutting taxes on investments more than earnings. So if you're the CEO of a corporation and you're making $3 or $4 million a year, you're going to be paying a much more effective rate. Higher rate than if you're sitting out and just collecting your money on your investment. The other thing that I see, and I'm going to throw it over to these other guys, is that what we have in America is a corporate culture that's driven by stock prices. The corporation, people, is run by a corporation. If you go into a corporation, well, we've had a pattern for, I don't know, almost 30 years of, say a manager goes in, he boosts the stock prices, he gets a huge benefit, and he moves on to the next company where he goes and bumps the stock prices up usually by firing people or whatever. What this is going to do is that it means that the people who have wealth are going to have more wealth without working by investing. It means that the concentration of money is going to shift even further, not only just to the wealthy, but to the wealthy who are not working or whose job is a small part of their income. It's hard to know the full impact of this, but it can't be really that great. I mean, the whole idea of taxing investment income at such a lower percentage than work income is iffy to start with. Now, the Republicans have a justification for it, which is it encourages investment. But it also encourages the increase of wealth in the hands of a very small part of the American, and in fact, it's the world population. A tiny part of that population gets, I think, all the increases in income, and I maybe have the statistic wrong, maybe Colosser. Last year, 78% of it went to the top 1% of the population, of the increase in income and money.
According to Paul Krugman, 83% of the effects of the tax bill will go to the 1%.
Right. Well, yeah, I want to add that and reiterate that the idea, and this is from Investopedia, the idea that cutting taxes boosts growth to the extent that government revenue actually increases is almost universally rejected by economists, and for a long time, the Treasury did not release even its own analysis, as we pointed out. Munchin, the Secretary of the Treasury, that didn't
the economy didn't boom
to
with
November
the 30th, tax
and
cuts,
it passed
right?
on December 22nd.
At one point, Munchin did publish a number, or the Treasury Department published a number saying that it would produce 7% growth for several years to come, which is an absolutely ridiculous number because there's no country in the world that's growing at 7%. Maybe some very, very underdeveloped country that suddenly, has an industrial revolution. But 7% for a developed country is absurd. I mean, at 3% is good. Anything beyond that, you're starting to dream, and 7% is an insult to the intelligence of anybody who follows economics.
Well, the one industry that has in the United States that has triple-digit increases, the marijuana industry, was just almost threatened out of existence by Jeff Sessions recently. Listening to an item this morning. that, you know, reopening the prospect of federal prosecutions for, you know, the 7 or 9 states that, you know, Colorado, many states that have legalized marijuana. You have California bankers that are now leery of once again processing all the millions of dollars that marijuana producers and sellers are making. And this has become, so they, I mean, they took the one industry that was, I think two of them, and then, of course, the solar industry, which, by the way, employs more people than coal, and we're going to tax the, and excise tax and tariff the snot out of that. So
they're putting a lot of people out of work.
They just hurt those two major industries. In favor of these two dinosaur industries.
The cannabis industry is really hot, apparently, with millennials in the stock market. They like that and Bitcoin, both of which are, investment advice.
Bitcoin is a, you know, is a complete tulip, right?
Right.
I mean, that's something that makes absolutely no sense and will at some point have a spectacular collapse.
Yeah. The tulip, tell folks what the tulip thing, that's the famous example of an investment and an industry that got bid up way beyond making any kind of economic sense.
Well, I forgot which century it was. It may have been the
17th. It was the 19th, yeah.
No, it wasn't the 19th. It was before that.
It was
the
18th?
For some reason, there was a tulip craze in Holland. And people would give away fortunes for a rare tulip bulb. And then the tulip bulb prices started to level and even go down. And the government assured the people that there was nothing wrong with the tulip industry. And, of course, it was an enormous crash, and people lost a lot of money because eventually, economically, what can you do with a tulip? Not a hell of a lot, unless you think somebody else is going to pay even more for it. And the same is true of Bitcoin.
And it was sort of true of the Internet bubble bursting.
Right.
I remember going to a party and people offering to invest in my little company. You know, that people were – and if you wanted to invest in my company, you were insane, okay?
Okay. Well, the difference is, though, that the Internet was real. And,
yes.
And a lot of the companies that started actually became very successful and – really made a contribution
that's
to the
we need
true.
To have a show
Bitcoin
on,
and tulips never did.
Yeah, I don't know. I disagree with you wholeheartedly on Bitcoin. I don't know squat about tulips. But I think Bitcoin is real. I mean, code is real. A unique code is even more real. And it has value. It is, I think, as real and tangible. Now, the absurd prices, you know, $19,000 for a Bitcoin. Now, but, you know, there's 20, 30, 40, I don't know, maybe hundreds of Bitcoin bunches, groups starting up. And so the original. So but it has value, and it is real. It is tangible. Code is tangible.
Where is it tangible?
Unique code is tangible. Unique code is just as tangible as a piece of gold.
I think Klaus is right, though, Mike. I understand that the algorithm stuff are important, but this feels like one of these boondoggle things.
The value feels like one of the boondoggles. The item itself has value and is real.
All right. The internet crash took place in an industry, as Klaus correctly says, an industry that was producing a lot of good stuff. The problem, it was overvalued. And a whole lot of the companies were not good. And at one point, if you were in the early days of the internet business, you could sell almost anything to anybody.
Right.
That collapsed.
Right.
And that's what I think.
That's what's going on with Bitcoin. But, it, you know, because I, don't get me wrong, as
not how many Bitcoins you got, Mike?
No, I have none. Mark Cuban said, you know, guy that's on Shark Tank and owns the basketball team, he said, you know, wasn't exactly a unique expression. He said, only invest in Bitcoin which you're willing to lose. I say the same thing to myself when I walk into the casino. So there is that aspect of it.
One of the things that Mike and Klaus were talking about earlier is that the provisions that cut taxes on individuals sunset in 2025. If they renew them, then the budget deficit they're creating goes from, say, $1.5 to $2.2 trillion. So they're caught in this bind. If they let them go, then your taxes are going to go up. If they don't let them go, the deficit's going to go up.
Right.
So it's kind of that simple. So we have, yet again, another Republican tax plan. The money's going to the wealthy. It's going to the corporation. Corporation culture is not driven by, let's increase the wages of the workers. That does happen in a tight labor market. But it's generated by how much in profits can I do? What can I do for my stockholders? So almost every economist, and this is fairly far across the line into conservatives and libertarians, think that most of the profits from the Torpus tax cut are going to be paid out to investors in the company.
Let me go through a few things.
Well, exactly. I mean, and a third of those benefit goes to foreigners. And then top 1% of domestic households own 40% of all the stock holdings, and the bottom 80 just 7%. So some people own a little bit of stock, normal people, regular people, through their IRAs. But basically, the bulk of it is foreigners and the top 1%.
The problem with the top 1% and the top 0.1% is that it's not just the United States. It's international. It's not just the wealthy in the United States that are getting a higher and higher part of the increase in income and funds. It's happening pretty much at different rates around the world. And so there's a kind of self-reinforcing thing. So as we shift money to the wealthy are going to take this money and buy back propaganda to convince us it was a good idea. In other words, this is going to shift power to the very wealthy, even more than they have now. And then we're going to get people like the Koch brothers, but there'll be a lot of much more hidden groups. Koch brothers we can kind of keep a little bit of an eye on now because we know what their front groups are. But some of these others, they're going to be a whole campaign to convince you that you're going to be benefiting and that everything's going to be great.
I wonder whether, doesn't there come a point, and I think there does, when people realize that the propaganda is just that, propaganda, that their tax cuts were relatively minimal, 30 million are going to lose their health care. It's going to be damn hard to convince them that all that's a really terrific idea.
But see, they're doing it diffuse. It's like climate change. See, climate change is so indirect and affects mostly little poor countries now, little islands that are getting flooded, that it's hard to get people to understand how serious it is because it's so spread out, Klaus. The impact are so spread out. If I do something like have a big oil spill in Oklahoma or something where I'm originally from, the impact is immediate. People can see it. I mean, but this is spread out. And so what they're doing is they're diffusing the negative impacts of what they're doing over a longer period of time to a lot of different people. And it's not going to be as visible as the tax cuts on your income tax forms.
For our show on the tax, the new tax law, the Tax Cut and Job Act, the TCJA, I want to do nuts and bolts really quickly. There's 7 tax brackets still, if you keep track of such things. There's still 10%, 12%, 22%, 24%, 32%, 35%, and 37%. Now, the rates have been lowered in some of those. The standard deduction has essentially been doubled. If you were one person, it went from $6,300 to $12,000. If there's two of you, it went from $12,000 to $24,000. The standard deduction. The personal exemption is gone. You used to be able to take off $4,050. When this tax goes into effect, you can't do it anymore. The state and local tax deduction now has a cap. That was one of the big things that held it up. But now there's a $10,000 cap on your state and local tax deductions. And that, like I said, doesn't affect a lot of people in some states, and certainly doesn't affect me, but it does affect people in higher tax states. The child tax credit has been expanded. This was another thing that held it up. that they wanted to expand. The child tax credit has been doubled to $2,000 for children under 17. This other kind of interesting thing, this new tax credit for non-child dependents, this is kind of designed, what's happening to a lot of folks right now, and this is actually kind of a good thing, that you can take a $500 temporary credit if you're taking care of an older relative or someone else, and that's happening a lot. Fewer people will have to deal with the alternative minimum tax. I don't even want to go near that, but that did come up on a few shows.
A way, if you took all kinds of clever tax deductions,
yeah,
and you had a lot of money, that you still had to pay some taxes. They've cut that out, Mike. That's a good point.
And the mortgage interest deduction has been lowered, I guess, but still enough of it exists. So let me see what the current homeowners are in the clear. But from now on, anyone buying a new home will only be able to deduct the first $750,000 of the mortgage debt. That's down from $1 million. Once again, the deal with people that I don't know.
So there's different statistics, but the one I'm looking at from the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities say that the top fifth of income earners are going to get 70% of the benefits clause, and that the top 1% are going to get 34%. Poorer folks, if you're in the lowest or second fifth or the middle fifth, you're going to get combined less than 15% of the actual cut. The money is look, folks, the money is going to the wealthy. That's the bottom line. How, if you believe Republican rhetoric, that's a good thing because they're going to distribute
it
to their
workers.
But here's
the problem. All day today, you're going to hear about how great the stock market's doing. And Trump is taking credit. So he's taking credit for a great and booming economy. But I don't know anybody in the stock market. Poor people can't invest in the stock market. If at best, poor people have pensions that rely on bonds. And when stock prices go up, what happens to bond prices, Claus? They go down.
Well, no, bond prices fluctuate with interest rates, not with stock prices.
Yeah, and I think that this gets too technical, but this actually, in the end, hurts bonds and helps stocks. This is the way they're doing this.
And bond prices, if you have a pension that you're living on. Still, if you're lucky enough to still have one that they haven't eliminated, and you're not living on dog food and Social Security, which is what is the Republican goal, by the way, if you still have a pension fund, then that depends on bond prices.
But how?
The thing about bond prices is bond prices, you know, will only go down if interest rates go up. And there's no clear indication that this tax bill will have an influence on interest rates. The Fed sets the interest, the Federal Reserve sets the short-term rates based on economic conditions, and that influences the long-term rates. But if there's no inflation, because this is not a stimulus bill, this is just a shift of wealth from the middle class and even the poor to the rich, it's not stimulative. It's not going to increase consumption and drive up inflation. So there's no reason why the Fed should raise interest rates to a rate where, you know, mm-hmm. bond prices get really hurt.
It's a really, really a nest of really complicated issues. And it's a nest of things that we really don't know. There are predictions and stuff. When you get into this stuff, it's like trying to invest in a company that's in a market that you think is going to go up. Say you're interested in healthcare. The individual company may not. This could be a very, very complicated thing. What we're again seeing from the Republicans is a shift of the money to people who have money, a shift of money to people who get their money from their investments rather than from working. That's the bottom line.
Well, that's
in my take.
That's true.
Of course.
You're right.
And the idea that, that the tax change such as this has such a huge impact and was so not discussed. This kind of thing should be discussed and analyzed and needs the at least somewhat understanding or the imprimatur of the American people.
I think it's the most secretive bill in United States history, most secretive, significant bill. We're not talking about some little pork barrel.
And the other thing that we need to discuss sometime is, okay, that we can throw in around these trillion-dollar deficits, and Klaus is going to come in and tell us, well, you know, why does it matter? Who gives a crap about $1.4 trillion or $2 trillion deficits? But we need to talk about why that does matter. Why do this sort of deficit, besides the fact that they're going to cut, social safety nets, they're going to go after ridiculous things like Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security, in order to, this is such an obvious, and don't ask me why. Somebody's got to tell me why that Paul Ryan wants to, and the Republicans want to lower. What gain is there by taking some poor schmuck that makes $800 a month?
They increase the deficit next year. They're going to say we don't have any money. We have to cut Social Security.
I get that, but it doesn't. I don't know why they want to.
They're just that kind of guys.
Well, that must be.
What do you think, Klaus?
Yeah, I mean, there's no.
Well, I don't get the lot. I mean, I'm agreeing with Mike, and I'm saying something a little different, but I'm agreeing with Mike. I don't see – if you want to have a country where everybody's in it together, accentuating the differences between the rich and poor and between different ethnic groups, between all this stuff, and everything, pulling everything apart and redistributing it doesn't seem like a good idea.
No, it's very bad public policy, obviously, and the only way – that you can balance this is by increasing taxes, not by lowering them. And the taxes, you know, should be increased on the wealthy because they're number one, they can afford to pay it and would equalize this total disequilibrium. The way fiscal policy should be conducted is this, that when 2008, when, you know, the world fell apart, that's when you run a deficit to stimulate the economy, which the Obama administration did absolutely correctly. By the time the economy is humming like it is now, you start to pay back the deficit. You lower the deficit.
That's what should be done. But I want to read this before. It's whose tax cuts, according to, once again, Investopedia, released on December 18th, the law is expected to raise the after-tax income of 80.4% of households in 2018. But the cut is not distributed evenly or progressively. 93.7% of taxpayers in the highest earning quartile will receive a tax break, while 53.9% of those in the lowest quartile will. Even so, an average of every part of the income spectrum will not receive a tax break.
Well, we're about out of time. Yeah, we're about out of time, Mike. Have we got any announcements? We do want people to visit our website.
We want to say hello and thank you to the and congratulations on your successful annual meeting of to Democrats of the Red Rocks. Terry Goddard was in town last night, made a great speech about dark money, by the way.
We're going to have him on the show. I talked to Terry after the meeting.
So he calls dirty money. We're going to look at his petition that he's passing. Please listen to Chasm Online, by the way. If you're not in your car, you want to listen to Democratic Perspective, you can find us. It's live streamed at the Chasm website. And that's a good way to listen to Democratic Perspective.
And you can donate on our website. You can, even a small monthly contribution would be very, very helpful. We do want to thank all our donors. We really do appreciate their help.
VBID.org is where you can find all about us. VBID.org. Thanks, folks.
You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and our nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 a.m. news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.